I think we have four topics left on the agenda for today. And before we start into the agenda, I want to inform you that we like to take a photo of this group at the coffee break. If you don't like to be on the photo, you should go to the kitchen. But otherwise, I think at the coffee break, we stay here for a photo for the group, which we want to then publish in social media. We doing that more and more. And
I forgot my big hat.
You can wear whatever you like. Okay, having said that, I think we will start with then agenda point number 8, which is group insurance policies, and Laura.
Okay, so agenda paper 8, hot topic for the day. So paper 8 addresses a submission about group insurance policies that allow an insurer to provide insurance coverage to members of an association or customers of a bank. In this paper, we refer to those members or customers that take up the insurance cover as certificate holders. The submission includes specific fact patterns for two types of group insurance policies, referred to as a group association policy and a group creditor policy. The submission explains that in these fact patterns, the insurer and the association or bank, both of them can terminate the insurance coverage for all of the certificate holders with a 90-day notice period. And the submission asks whether cash flows that are outside of the 90 days are within the contract boundary. To be able to perform this assessment, the analysis in this paper follows the following approach, which is then applied to the specific fact pattern in the submission. Firstly, we look to identify who the policyholder of an insurance contract is, applying the definition that's in IFRS 17. Is it the certificate holders, or is it the association or the bank? Secondly, we then look, if the policyholder is the certificate holders, does the arrangement represent one insurance contract or multiple insurance contracts? And then thirdly, we move on to assess the contract boundary of the insurance contracts that we've identified. So with that, I'd like to ask TRG members for your views on the analysis that's in this paper.
Okay, thanks, Laura. All agree?
Someone has to start. this was a helpful paper, I think, on the whole. But I think what I would like to reiterate is that in the discussions we've had previously, that prima facie, the single contract and you don't break that unless there are clear requirements to apply significant judgment and careful consideration to then do that. So if it is clear, there's a sort of hierarchy of events you have to go through. If it's very clear who the beneficiaries are and you don't need to break the policy, you wouldn't need to refer to this. If you're in doubt as a preparer because you've got different circumstances, then yes, these are very helpful criteria, I think, to go through. But I think when we talked about this in the Australian market, we have a number of professional indemnity associations. There are questions around the superannuation funds and the way they're set up where these sort of factors could be relevant. But what was quite clear is that every single situation was very different. And so it's really important to notice that these are applied to a quite narrow fact set. And it is not, you're not necessarily going to come up with the same conclusions as here. So I think that's really important to note.
Thanks. Sechon?
Thank you. Yeah, we're fine with the paper as it is, noting the very specific fact patterns mentioned in the paper here. The concern is on the need to identify all the certificate members as an individual policyholder. But I note that the fact pattern here, a key one is that the insurance coverage here is priced and sold separately. So normally in group insurance, that's not the case here. So I would say this is a very specific example. Yeah. Having said that, yeah, I do want to caution given the staff conclusion on paragraph 24, where it mentioned the certificate holder's expectation doesn't matter or not relevant in the assessment here. paragraph 2 of IFRS 17, the substantive obligation could include implied terms of those contracts. It may not be explicitly stated yet. So one need to ask how this expectation of the certificate holders came about yet. So if it's because of some implicit promises, it may change the conclusion here.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for that. Leslie?
Just to continue on what Anne was saying a bit more specifically, there are some criteria given in paragraph 20. There are three criteria. Just so it's absolutely clear that those are merely indicative and not determinative. We have to consider the facts and circumstances of each individual.
Yes, and these are the criteria that we considered when we looked at this specific fact pattern, obviously.
Massimo?
I agree with what has been said so far by the other members. I think that in this case the trigger element is especially the letter A of paragraph 20, and so the fact that insurance coverage is priced and sold separately, and we have other arrangements where this is not the case, and so the conclusion about the identification of insurance contract is different. So I would like to stress the fact that it's very based on these specific fact patterns, but there are other arrangements where this specific point is not fulfilled, and so the conclusion will be different.
Jens?
Yeah, I also agree with the fact pattern, and we understand then when you look to the contract and when you look to the contract with the group, and we think that this contract is rather a framework agreement than a specific contract. And the specific contract, as an echo what Massimo is pointing out, is an insurance coverage that is priced and sold separately with each individual. We noticed that you mentioned that these are indicative. I think this is in line with what we discussed in February, and that there is no determinative guidance. And we acknowledge this. And I agree that it depends on facts and circumstances. There might be other arrangements where we come to a different conclusion, but the criteria A, I think, is a really high threshold to overcome the conclusion that we have a separate contract on the policy on for the single individual.
I also agree with this specific fact pattern and the staff conclusions. I would like to emphasize, I think, the point you made, that the criteria, the indicative criteria in 20 are relevant for this specific fact pattern. Given different arrangements and fact pattern, there might be different or additional or even less other factors which you need to consider to conclude. I think this is important because in discussions in front of the THG, some people said, okay, now these are the general factors I always need to apply when I have group contracts. In many cases, this might be the case, but in specific arrangements, there might be other factors which are also important and relevant to apply the overall judgment. This is my first point. The second point is point A, the insurance coverage is priced and sold separately. Also, this is not a black and white criteria digital decision in some cases, because even if you price and sell it separately, it could be that you don't do it in the way you would do for an arrangement or a contract outside a group arrangement. So I think whenever the group arrangement is affecting pricing, the underwriting process and the decision making, which sometimes is simplified compared to individual pricing and contracting, and this could be a factor of saying you move more to the group level than to the individual level. So the point I would like to make is that this is not a digital decision. It's priced separately, yes or no, but you need to compare it then with a standalone pricing and underwriting decision for individual contract to really get to the ground, okay, is it now substantially really different? What is the impact of the group arrangement on the individual arrangement, and what is, so to say, the prevailing view which really comes through in this underwriting and pricing decision? Is it more the group view, or is it that the group is in substance, the group contract has no really impact on the pricing and underwriting decision, which then would be an indicator for having many individual contracts? Thanks.
Okay, Vasilka?
I agree with the staff's analysis of the specific fact pattern, but similarly want to emphasize that this is a very, very specific fact pattern and echo very much what Roman said, that you need to analyze the specific fact and circumstances of an arrangement, especially going to that point about pricing individual components individually, you know, as an indicator whether this is an individual contract or not, because there are quite a lot of arrangements out there in the marketplace where you price individual components individually, but you do that in the context of an overall arrangement, and it is not the same as you would if it was a standalone contract. And also in that specific fact pattern, what I was struggling a bit with, I did not see an analysis of one of the points in the fact pattern about the fact that you cancel either all of the contracts or none. So there must be a commercial reason and a driver behind that, and I would have liked to understand that because it may have impacted the analysis. Okay. Again, in the context of that paragraph two, because this, with the expectation that it not be cancelled, kind of suggests that there might be more into that fact pattern.
Okay, thanks. Gary?
Thank you. I thought this was a very helpful paper because we have seen other group schemes that we have analysed. So I think the paper is helpful for everyone to understand you need to assess all the facts and circumstances. We agree with the analysis that's done here and the conclusions that's reached, but as others have said, other facts and circumstances come up with a different answer. And indeed, there are some situations where it can be grey as well, but we absolutely agree with it and it's a helpful paper.
Okay, Mary?
Very brief remark from me, because like everybody else, I think I'm in agreement with the accounting analysis here. And the thing I think I'd just add is this is a very timely reminder from an operational perspective that insurers need to be looking at these sorts of arrangements, because as we've heard, they are very diverse in practice and they can have a material impact.
Thanks for this. And Summary?
Okay. So I think what I heard is that everybody, the TRG members agreed with the analysis in the paper for the specific facts and circumstances, but as in all scenarios, we think about the relevant facts and circumstances for our specific fact pattern. And for these types of arrangements, there are quite a few different fact patterns out there.
Just to be clear, I think that TRG members agree with the analysis that we provide. Those three steps are relevant in the analysis, not just for this specific fact pattern, for all other fact patterns. So identifying the policyholder, then determining what the contract is, whether it's one or multiple contract, and then you can look at boundaries and everything else. And also they agree with how we apply this analysis to that specific fact pattern. So we can still have something that is useful for other fact patterns. And is that okay?
Just one question.
Okay.
Is the policyholder being defined as the certificate holder a necessary condition for it to be separate contracts? I think you're saying yes.
Well, I think it's a starting point. I think that once you identify that the policyholder is the bank or association, it's kind of hard to split that contract into something.
Agreed.
Else.
Agreed. So I just wanted to confirm that okay. Was a necessary okay. condition.
Mary, that is not what... You have your card?
Say sorry.
Okay. Very good. I'm fine and...